I'm in a position to know, because the Patrick Henry Society has studied the whole thing. The real problem, whether you like it or not, is whether you're going to sit back and let desegregation spread throughout the entire South. And it's an indisputable fact that there could be no other result. The Negroes will literally, and I do mean literally, control the South. The vote will be theirs. You'll have black mayors and black policemen the way they do in Chicago and New York already. Like is not a black governor and black doctors to deliver your babies. If they find time, that is. And that's the way it'll be. Did you ever stop to think about that? When you let those 10 enter your school, did you?
Yes, only a few thought it over. They get all excited, they jump up and down, and then they go to church where the preacher says, "Oh, we gotta do this right, man. We gotta have integration, yeah." And then they go to the school and they get the government education, yeah. We can't have this racial separation. We gotta have mixing. Well, why? Because we have to have mixing. Don't you understand? It's a good thing for us. Why? I'm not going to sit here and explain it to you. Harry Goldstein, Professor Goldstein, has figured it all out. God damn it, take it. You got to go along with it. Or what? Well, we'll ruin your business. We'll destroy your marriage. We'll turn your kids against you. Yeah, that's what'll happen. White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. This is White Aryan Resistance Radio Network, and this is Terrible Tommy right here in the bunker right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Fillet Station. And that's right next to the Weapons of Mass Destruction Used Equipment Yard, where we're trying to keep up with Mr. Cheney and that little twerp, George Bushy. Now his little brother's going to try to run. What a joke this all is. Well, it's a sick joke. It's a scary joke. And it's a mean joke. But the trouble is, there's not that many people laughing. It is the 28th of May, 2015, and on Thor's Day, and I like Thor's Day because it's next to Freya's Day, and I get to play one of those lovey-dovey songs on there. I like those lovey-dovey songs, yeah. I guess I'm just an old softy, yeah, okay. And we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And that's where you send all your money. You might as well, because the bottom's going to drop out of it anyhow. It's not going to be worth anything, so you might as well send it to me, and I can have it in my pouch and have it as not worth anything. Yeah, I don't think that's a very good deal, do you? I want to thank one of our associates that I've known for years, sent me a nice donation that we can buy some new equipment and so forth. And I really appreciate that. It was the largest donation I got since J.B. Stoner gave me a fairly large donation back in 1980 when I was running for Congress. That was it, man. Good old J.B. Stoner. He's gone, but he's always going to be remembered. When I first met J.B., I thought he went too far. I thought he run around saying nigger all the time. And I said, well, that's not good. How are you going to recruit people? Well, I want to tell you something. He was right. If anything, he didn't do it enough. Because we got a problem, and we got to say what we want to say. And we got to call a spade, or a Negro, or if you want to call him an N-word, that's okay. If you want to call him a nigger, that's okay too, because they're not of our people. It's none of their business if they don't like it. Sorry, boys. Call the Black Eagle and complain. Nobody seems to have a problem when they insult us and call us all kinds of names. And I know with me, I get called all kinds of names all the time. That's okay. Oh, yeah, that's all right. Well, in the morning when I get up, I always turn on to to Roku and go to the Russian news, and they've got a section on there called Euro News, which gives you little spots from all over Europe and Russia and Asia and everything. So anyhow, oh yeah, I noticed this morning the military-industrial complex is fucking around with the Chinese again. You know, the Chinese say they have influence in the South China Sea. Well, of course they should have influence in the South China Sea. And so the Washington's going in there and saying, well, you can't do this, you shouldn't do that, we're saying get out of here and all that. You know what, if I was China, not, you know, I'm sorry, boys, I'm not a Chinese race mixer, but I want to tell you, if I was a Chinese, I'd tell Washington to go plumb straight to hell. The South China Sea, we have the power and we're going to have influence over it. And that's all there is to that. Uncle Sammy, take a whammy. See, this is the kind of shit that gets us in trouble all the time and gets young white Americans and others in trouble and gets them killed. Because this is empire. This has nothing to do with a true government of the United States. This is empire, and it's a quasi-dictatorship, and they do whatever they want. And they go wherever they want in the world and tear shit up, and then we got to pay the price. The working class has to not only go there and die, but pay the price in taxes and everything else. So, who's your enemy, man? You know, they always say, who's your daddy? Well, who's your enemy, man? Well, I'll tell you, my enemy's on Wall Street. My enemy is in the Pentagon. Yeah. My enemy is in the Federal Reserve. My enemy's in Hollywood. Not all Hollywood, because there are some good movies come out once in a while. That's where my enemy's at. I don't have to go over to China and find somebody not to like. You know, I think China should take care of Chinese things. The Japanese should take care of Japanese things. And we should take care of continental United States and keep our nose out of other people's business. I'm going to play some of these outtakes and we'll see how it goes. I make comments on some of them.
Received with military honors, Israeli President Reuven Rivlin has been welcomed by his German counterpart at the Presidential Palace in Berlin. The visit celebrates 50 years of bilateral diplomatic relations between the two countries. On the eve of the anniversary, Rivlin visited the Gleis 17 Memorial, marking the spot from where some 50,000 Jews were deported to Nazi concentration camps during World War II.
Democracy alone does not make us immune to nationalism and fascism. No nation is immune to anti-Semitism. Here on Platform 17, we must commit to look hatred in the eye.
He is due to meet German Chancellor Angela Merkel on Tuesday, with a key topic of discussion expected to be the ongoing conflict between Israel and the Palestinian territories.
Well, did you hear that? Nationalism is evil. All nationalism is evil. Do you get that, boys and girls? The Jews don't like nationalism unless it's Jewish nationalism. Well, slavery was supposed to have been over a long time ago, but we know it still goes on all over the world through predatory capitalism. And now, isn't it ironic that Obama now is the most powerful slave master that's ever existed, with all these trade programs and so forth that ride herd through the capitalists on all the third world and paying them slave wages, if any wages at all, and all the things they do to them, including allowing their plants to burn down and burn people up, you know, the whole bit. So that makes Obama the most powerful slave master that ever lived. Ask some of those talk shows about that.
Rent and housing costs in London are so bad and so high and so outpriced that people are being pushed into houseboats. Now they're filling up the rivers with houseboats. Shades of Asia.
And as the capitalistas manipulate the property values artificially and control the credit market and play it like a fiddle, these people, poor people, white people. However, I don't sympathize too much because they don't rise up and do anything about it. But yet, the gates of immigration are wide open in Britain all the time. Come on in. Oh, somebody stubbed their toe? Come on into Britain. Oh, you got a cyst on your pinky? Come on into Britain. Oh, we'll take you. We're a small island, but we'll take everybody in the world, man. And us white people, us white working class, we'll try to find ourselves a sampan or a little old boat. We'll go live in the river, which is becoming more polluted all the time. Oh, Whitey, you deserve whatever you permit. Speaking of housing, if that's not bad enough, how about have you been to the grocery store lately? I happened to enter a grocery store yesterday, the one I usually go to, and God almighty, the price of fruit and vegetables, have you noticed that? Have you noticed that at all? Well, you better start plant your garden, all that kind of stuff. But luckily, back here in the Midwest, we have a lot of farmers markets. And they're opening up probably this weekend. We got two or three here in town I live in where you can get good deals on that. But I'll tell you one thing. I'm going to cut down on meat. I don't have to have meat. Some people have to have meat. I'll get my protein or whatever, carbs or whatever, some other way. I'm not going to pay these Jewish middleman prices. Of course, you know that's where that comes from. It's the middlemen. The middlemen are getting it all the time, just like the middlemen of all this produce coming from China, all the little TVs and stuff. If you take all the middlemen's markup off of it, they'd be dirt cheap. And that's your little predatory capitalist in the middle, raking it off, man. And there's a lot of Jews in there, too, but believe me, there's plenty of blue-eyed blonde people in that business, too. So don't play the right wing game. Everything, including the weather, is caused by the Jews. I heard that rogue progressive went on the warpath last night or the night before, and so let's see what the hell he's bitching about.
Attacks by Hamas and other militant groups. Now, this works for church night because the Israelis will tell you that this land was given to them by their pretend God. I mean, what happens if somebody else comes along now, an older population from that part of the world, and says, wait a second, our God gave this to us before your God was born? I mean, it's ridiculous on his face, and it's ridiculous in substance, too. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. But the torture of children, who does that? What are the qualifications for someone who is hired by the Israeli military to torture children in the process of interrogating an 11-year-old, a 10-year-old, who was throwing stones at a bus, an Israeli bus, because the bus and the riders on the bus are in Palestinian territory. They are occupiers. I think about, when I read stuff like this, after I get over the initial shock that a supposedly civilized population, the Jews, who provided so many incredible individuals who came out of their religious and cultural training, from scientists to musicians to artists to you go down the list. How can they take other Semitic children and torture them because the kids were throwing stones at a bus? I think about my daughter Molly. And I know her very well, obviously. And if she, her entire life, had heard of the atrocities being perpetrated against her family and her people, her extended family, her friends, by this invading force, I don't have a doubt, not one second's doubt, that I'd have to keep Molly in the house, because if she got out, she too She is the type who would pick up stones or sticks and throw them in that little 10, 11-year-old act of defiance that the Israelis decide is an offense punishable by torture.
Son of a bitch. What's happened to these people, these Israelis? What has happened to them? What's happened to the Christians? What's happened to them? Well, actually nothing. All of these religious nutballs have been this way forever. All right.
Well, here's something you might want to think about. And I like to sit and think about things and put pieces of evidence together, all kinds of things from all over the world, what one person says, what one leader says, what another leader says, and pretty soon I come up with a picture. And the picture I came up with was that book by that's just been put out by the Jewish guy on the bin Laden murder. And of course we all would ask ourselves, or I did, why would they not try to take him alive and take him to interrogate him and find out which of the Saudis were really planning the 9/11 and all the things he could have told them? But they shot him point blank. He was unarmed, and then they take him and wrap him in a sheet or a rug or something, take him out to sea and dump him overboard into a ship. So at that point, this story sort of goes dead, but Tommy's sitting here thinking, wait a minute, there's got to be more to this story. Well, here's the way I'll fill in the more to the story. Osama bin Laden was a double. In fact, he had several doubles. All people like that do. And so this was a double, and that's why they didn't have hardly any guards there to do a firefight with the Marines. Yeah, I mean, you know, there was no guards there on a guy that's wanted worldwide, that they got a $1 million price on his head. He wouldn't be surrounded by even a common mobster in Chicago would have more than that, or a hell of a lot of guys, you know. I'm sure Al Capone, you wouldn't have walked into Al Capone's place and not had a big super firefight. So here he was, he's a double. And they took him out of there and took him back into Saudi Arabia, and it's very easy to melt a guy like that back into the society or the public. I don't think they'd even have to do plastic surgery on him. And, of course, the leaders in Saudi Arabia are going to protect him no matter what, unless he starts to say he wants to talk, and then they're going to kill him. But isn't that sort of simple, the logic I'm using? And they went in there to murder him. They didn't go in there to capture a guy who's got all kinds of information. They went in there to murder him. And there was nobody around to guard him, except his wife, I guess. And she got shot in a knee. So anyhow, talk to the talk show guys about that and what terrible Tommy's concluding. But you know, they're not going to want to talk about it because they wanted it over and done and swept under the table, and he's gone. So you're not going to get anybody wanting to question what I'm questioning, because they don't want to talk about it. Well, of course they don't want to talk about it, because George Bush and all, Cheney and all the bastards were in on it, and Obama, of course, on his watch, and he was in on it. You know, the big boys told him, "This is what we're going to do, boy." And Obama says, I understand. I do that.
Two women. women credited with creating revolutionary gene editing technology have won this year's Princess of Asturias Award for technical and scientific research. Emmanuelle Charpentier and Jennifer Doudna have developed a way to give scientists the power to remove or add genetic material at will. Announcing the award, the president of the jury praised their work as groundbreaking. Both researchers studied how bacteria defend against certain viruses that infect them, destroying their DNA by recognizing some of its features, he said. This methodology allows them to remove, activate, inactivate, or even correct genes and could be used in various applications for basic research, as well as in agriculture, livestock, and biomedicine. Since Doudna and Charpentier published a paper in the journal Science in 2012 describing the technique, scientists worldwide have used the method to experiment on plant, animal, and human cells, as well as to test potential cures for sickle cell anemia and cancer.
These crocodiles have a rich heritage. Their parents were Castro and Hilly, presented by Fidel Castro to the Soviet cosmonaut Vladimir Shatilov. He took them to Moscow and then donated them to a Swedish zoo. The offspring have now returned to Cuba and are set to be released back into the wild to bolster the diminishing population in the Zapata swamp. Firstly, Fidel Castro will be amazed that a gift he presented to a Soviet friend has proved so fruitful and worthwhile. I think he'll be very happy. The Cuban crocodile is in grave danger. Formerly numerous across the Caribbean, it's now only found in two swamps in Cuba, where it's threatened by interbreeding, loss of habitat, and poaching.
Well, do you notice that the Cuban alligators are race mixers, and that's why they're dying out? Did you catch that? You know, probably most people don't catch that. I like to catch those little things there when they're dying out because of mixed breeding, and we're dying out because of mixed breeding too. So we got a co-relationship with the Cuban alligator man. Well, here we go, direct from Cannes. They got half the movies are about the Holocaust, Ben. And you better go watch it. You better spend your money seeing that because, well, you'll see what happened if you don't, man.
Section of the Cannes Film Festival by FIPRESI, the International Federation of Film Critics. Bringing together critics from around the world, the federation is known for defending filmmakers unafraid of taking risks. It was really difficult. We met a lot of resistance when trying to get funding for the film. It's true that we were immediately in deep waters with a debut film like this one. It's an intense first experience in a challenging place, which is Cannes, but we are really happy. The film follows 2 days in the life of a Jewish Hungarian member of the Sonderkommando, the group of Jewish prisoners forced to assist the Nazis in the gas chambers in Auschwitz. While working in one of the crematoriums, Saul discovers the corpse of a boy he takes for his son and decides to carry out an impossible task, find a rabbi and give the boy a proper burial. The Federation is celebrating its 90th anniversary this year, and its president was delighted with the high quality of movies at this edition of Cannes.
The choice of Son of Saul as the best film in the competition by the FIPRESI jury is a very good choice. If I were in the jury, I would vote for it also. It's a film which is creative, and it's a beginner's film.
Well, there we go, another Holocaust movie. You can always make money on a Holocaust movie. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I got a surprise for you. Next year, they're planning on producing a movie called Auschwitz. And it's going to be a comedy with Woody Allen in it. How about that?
Well, why not? They've done the movie, the Holocaust, every other fucking way that can happen, so let's have a comedy and see what happens. We can make money on that. All the anti-Semites will go to that one. You know this Mike Huckabee, the fat fuck, who is, well, he did lose weight when he ran for president last time, but he's probably, I think he's gained it all back up. And Fox will put anybody on their network. They'll put anybody on. And so here he is. And the old radical progressive, rogue progressive, talking about Mike Huckabee and his history, which we put out many times, how he let a homicidal maniac nigger out and then he went out and killed another woman, raped her, a white woman. Well, that's okay. That's okay. That's only one. You can't say that he represents the rest of them, because my Christian religion says we got to learn to forgive, man. Come on, if you ain't forgiven, you ain't living, man. The baby Jesus demands it.
Stories still to come from those what he called potty-mouthed, trashy women at Fox that he said he was forced to work with. But that's all garbage. Here's the real story. At the top of everyone's hit list is Huckabee's involvement in the parole of Wayne Eugene Dumond, career criminal and rapist, who raped and murdered another woman in Missouri after Huckabee lent him a helping hand and got him paroled. Now, this is for real. This is not Willie Horton. This is for real. The full details of the story were published by the Arkansas Times, but here are a few things you need to know. This is how the story went. This Dumond character was arrested multiple times from 1972 to 1976 for charges ranging from murder to molestation to rape. Every time he walked after agreeing to testify against other people or getting a slap on the wrist. In 1984, he raped 17-year-old cheerleader Ashley Stevens of Arkansas, who happened to be the third cousin of Bill Clinton. And he was later convicted and sentenced to 20 years in prison. But here comes Governor Mike Huckabee. Egged on by evangelicals and conservatives who believe that Bill Clinton is Satan incarnate, well, now Hillary is, and that Dumond was railroaded, Huckabee involved himself in Dumond's parole hearings, writing him to say, "Dear Wayne, my desire is that you be released from prison." Now, despite receiving letters from women who had previously been assaulted or raped by Dumond, Huckabee met with the parole board in a meeting that was not recorded and which later voted 4-1 to parole Dumond on the condition that he leave Arkansas. Parole board member Irmer Poindexter said, quote, "I signed the parole papers because the governor wanted Dumond paroled. I was thinking the governor was working for the best interests of the state," you know, getting him banished from Arkansas. So Dumond moved to Missouri in August 2000. And only a few months later, he was arrested again, this time for the rape and murder of Carol Sue Shields. Dumond went to prison again, where he later died. Now, it's entirely possible that politics and score settling with Bill Clinton had nothing to do with Huckabee getting involved with Dumond. There's a slight chance, 1%, half of 1%, that Huckabee, as a good Christian, was trying to love the sinner while hating the sin. Those are possibilities. It's also a possibility the moon is made out of green cheese and just on the other side where humans haven't been yet. But he can also expect, in what looks like a field of 20-plus Republicans trying to shoulder each other out of the way, you know, the clown car Republicans, while maintaining their own Jesus street cred, that he is going to be given the same passive-aggressive Christian treatment. These other candidates will let everyone know that they forgive Mike Huckabee for releasing a rapist to rape again and kill a young woman.
Yeah, we forgive him. Oh, you haven't heard about that? Yeah, Huckabee. This is where they're going to come from, the other Republicans. Yeah, Huckabee, we forgive him, but you know he released that rapist and the rapist raped again and then murdered some. But we forgive him because, you know, we're good Christians. So they'll be flooding the airwaves with every gory little detail. God bless their little opportunistic hearts. You know what I'm saying?
Well, thank you, Mike Malloy, for helping me co-host the show. Well, anyhow, you know, sometimes when I want a little comedy, and there is a lot of comedy around, but I go to African News. That's where I get my comedy. I watch this Burundi. No, I don't think one out of 1,000 people in this country know even where Burundi's at. They got a leader down there, the president down there, who says, I know they say I'm supposed to only have 3 terms, but fuck it, I'm going to take, or 2 terms, but I'm going to take 3 terms and they can kiss my black ass. Well, that didn't go down too well with a lot of the, black tar babies down there, and so they're running down the street and raising hell and maybe tossing a fire bomb or something like that, and here's a 200 Negroes in blue uniform chased them down the street. It's the funniest damn thing you ever seen. I'm telling you, you got to watch it. You got to get this African News, and that'll make you feel better, because the Negroes are down there killing Negroes. Keep the population down. Like I tell you, you got to keep the population down. Unfortunately, Lloyd George of England, back in the day when the First World War got started, him and his intellectual cohorts thought that World War I would knock the population down a lot. And, it knocked it down quite a bit, but as far as the world population, it didn't help a bit. You got to have a bigger war. You got to drop those A-bombs all over the place and get those Israelis. If we run out, they got some.
It shows one thing, the absolute decline of the American middle class and the growing gap between the very rich and the rest of us. In a Senate floor speech a couple of months ago, Sanders detailed measures to create millions of new jobs, raise wages, protect the environment, provide health care for everybody. He said the most significant question facing the American people is this, quote, are we prepared to take on the enormous economic and political power of the billionaire class, or do we continue to slide into economic and political oligarchy, end quote. That's his question. Nobody needs to be told, I don't think, that the collapse of the middle class, especially since it was accelerated, the wheels were greased by what the banksters, those sons of bitches, did to the entire country back in 2007, 2008, but all of it left the United States with more income inequality, more wealth inequality than any major country, and the highest rate of childhood poverty. Wow. Makes you proud? By God, let's wave a flag. Let's go bomb somebody. We'll show them, huh? Bernie said, today millions of Americans are working longer hours for lower wages. In dollars adjusted for inflation, the median male worker earned $783 less last year than he made 41 years ago. The median female worker made $1,337 less last year than she earned in 2007. Since 1999, household income for the median middle-class family is less than it was a quarter century ago. What happened after 1999? You remember, I'm sure. the Project for a New American Century, and the fascists took over the country. And the first thing they did was erase the possibility of a diminishing national debt. George W. Bush and his cohort of fascists gave everything, all the accumulated wealth, back to the people who least needed it. And then engineered an invasion of the United States, an attack on the United States, so that they could, for once and for all, get rid of the irritating notion of equal justice under the law, equal protection under the law, a rational society, and a definite separation of powers in this collapsing Democratic Republic of ours. So here we are today, and along comes Bernie Sanders. He said, "We once led the world in terms of the percentage of our people who graduated college. We're now in 12th place. Our infrastructure, once the envy of the world, is collapsing. Real unemployment today is not 5.8%, it's 11.5% if we include those who have given up or who are working part-time when they want to work full-time. Youth unemployment is 18.6%. And if you separate African-American youth unemployment, it is 32%. What was the total unemployment during the Great Depression? I think it was around 25%. All right, that's the bad news. Here's the good news. Sanders detailed a 12-point economic program. What he wants to do, if he's elected, to apply pressure from the top down. Now, I know that there are cynics out there. I probably would count myself among them if anybody else were talking. I understand the system, but we have a chance. We have a chance. We'll either take the chance or we won't. Come November 2016, when a third of the Senate's up, the entire House is up, and the presidency, okay? So, if the road to fascism continues apace, then I'm afraid this time, for real, oh, I hate saying this, I only have myself to blame. I don't know about you, but I will take responsibility if I don't get off my ass and leave behind my cynicism just on that one day, election day. I'll leave it at home. I'll get in my pickup truck. I'll go up here to the local church, and I will vote for Bernie Sanders one way or the other. I will also vote for a Democrats on the ticket that I think represent what I think the country needs. And if there aren't any, and dramatically high, because so far I think a green or something. And if there aren't any of those because I live in Georgia, then I'll leave the goddamn things blank. But I will vote for Sanders. Determined. No, I'm not determined. I'm frightened. I don't want to see this country erupt into bloody revolution, and I can smell it coming. I smell it.
I guess those progressives that don't believe in the Lord God Jehovah and the baby Jesus, but they believe in the tooth fairy, that you're going to vote yourself out, that Bernie's going to get us out of this? Yeah. It's way too late for that, I keep telling you. That's all over, man. Don't try. Every time it comes around getting close to the election, these guys, between elections, they say, "I'll never vote again. It's all a bunch of shit and everything else." But then the election starts coming around. Well, maybe there's a chance. Maybe there's a good one out there. Yeah, right. On a serious matter, we found out this week that Rand Paul had a little problem. The wind blew his hairpiece off, and everybody saw it, and all the news media saw it, and now you're going to see Rand Paul's bald head on the front cover of the magazine, People Magazine, probably. Okay, sorry, Rand Paul, I know how it goes. You know when things get really bad and you feel like jumping off a cliff? Well, you can always go to the Pope of the Church of What's Happening Now here at White Aryan Resistance and hear George Carlin. he's the greatest. He can get my mood into a better shape. So here we go. Let's see what Georgie's saying today.
You know what would be great for a guy like me? Just to be in a coma. Wouldn't that be great? Boy, you know, you just crap out, nothing to do all day. You breathe through a fucking tube, they feed you through a tube, and nothing to do. That's really living, you know what I mean? No phone calls coming in, nobody dropping by unexpectedly. And if they do drop by, you're completely unaware of it. Because you're in a fucking coma, and you're practically clinically dead. And you don't have to listen to their stupid bullshit. Their stupid bullshit. Like about their new ride around lawnmower with the two-tone horn and the GPS in case they get lost on the lawn. And their boss and their job and their car.
This is Walter Dennis. I'd like to...
You know, I keep Walter Dennis back here in the corner. He does a great job on this speech about the Negroes, but he keeps wanting to do it all the time, and I have to... Every once in a while, he barges right in and tries to take over the show. Walter, get back in the goddamn corner. Keep your old mouth shut until I ask for you. Sorry, George, for the interruption. I'm going to tune you back in here on my crystal set.
Your parents could be in hell right now. Your parents and your father for sure. Oh, shit, hell is full of dads. Full of dads. Even the ones who took you to the ball game. Just for beating the shit out of you once too often. And fucking the neighbor lady. And fucking the neighbor dog. And who knows, maybe even fucking the UPS man. We'll never know what mischief Dad was up to. Parents in hell. Kind of gives you a nice feeling, doesn't it? Does me. Grandparents in hell. Picture that. Picture your grandmother in hell. Baking pies without an oven. And if someone were in hell, I doubt very seriously he'd be smiling. I think he's down there now, screaming up at us. And I think he's in severe pain. People just refuse to be realistic.
Well, here's something that looks interesting, if I can get my microphone here right. A new petition on change.org is gaining worldwide attention, as more than 28,000 people have endorsed a call for white South Africans to be given a right of return to Europe, just like the Jews do to their fake country. The petition states that South Africans of European descent are facing ethnic cleansing and persecution, unquote, from the South African nigger government. The petition was started 1 week ago by a Brazilian man, Rodrigo Herhaus de Campos, who states over 4,000 white farmers have been brutally murdered, often including torture and rape and mutilation. Many white South Africans today live in poverty and squalor as a consequence of the ANC government's black economic empowerment policy, which shuts whites out of the labor pool. Well, I told the white South Africans, you should have fought to the death. There was no way out. Either you fought to the death or you lose the country, you lose everything. And they didn't listen because they went down to their local baby Jesus church and the preacher told them, well, we have to love each other and we'll work through this. You'll be okay. You'll be okay. You see what happened. Citing the Israeli government's policy of allowing all Jews the right of return to Israel, the petition says, it's not only advisable, but morally obligatory, that Europe should allow the white South Africans the right of return. The petition also calls for extending the same rights to whites living in Zimbabwe and Namibia. But the move has caused controversy in Europe and South Africa. No, we wouldn't want to help white people. Help white people? Shit. Let's see here. I've lost my place. But the move, okay, on May 23rd, the UK Express published a story with the headline, Europe could be overrun with white South Africans who have right of return. Europe overrun with white South Africans or white people? That's how bad it is. That's how crazy it's gotten. A few days later, the story's headline was changed to white South Africans fearing for their lives as the EU for right of return. In South Africa, a small political party, the Front National Suid-Afrika, has been designated the liaison for the effort. But other South Africans are outraged and strongly opposed to the petition. Well, those, to me, are not white people. They can call themselves, they can have white skin, but they have taken themselves out of the white family. And I say you're not going to take it with petitions. You're going to have to go back with guns or anywhere you're at with guns and armor and tanks. And I'll gladly sell them to you here at our equipment yard. Whitey, what you lose, you got to fight and bleed to get back. There's no way you're going to petitions. Do you realize how stupid that is? Petitions. Let's see, what else? The South African website, IOL, which represents a group of South African newspapers online, dismissed Hierhouse de Campos' statistics about farm murders as dubious. Oh, there's only half that many farmers being murdered in their sleep and their wives raped. But some experts argue, see, the capitalistas, the predatory capitalists, they don't give a shit. They don't care about white working class or white farmers. They're more dangerous to the white race than the blacks. And they should be dealt with. Dealt with. But some experts argue whites in South Africa are specifically targeted for violence. Well, of course they are. I've read news articles on that all for years. Of course they're targeted by niggers. Commentator Leontka Mercer, who was born in South Africa and lived for some years in the country, believes that the torture and mutilation of white murder victims shows evidence of, guess what, racial hatred. I think those niggers hate those white people. Mercer, a WND columnist and author of the Into the Cannibal's Pot, Lessons for America from Post-Apartheid South Africa, I don't need any lessons. I know what they're going to do if they get a chance. Told WND, the figures I've looked at show that a proportion to their percentage in the population, whites are likelier than blacks to be targeted. Of course they are. They always are. Every place in the world, you dumb shit. I mean, you know. See, when you start believing there's equality in the world and Negroes are equal to the white race, there's no end to the ridiculousness of what they say. Now, this differential could be chalked down to the fact that whites are likelier to be wealthier and the niggers want their money. That's not racist. That's economic. Nothing, however, explains the manner of death reserved for these victims. When attacked, whites, especially farmers and rural folk, are slaughtered in ways that would do Sheka Zulu proud, in ways that beggar belief. The telltale of racial hatred is seared into the mangled, mutilated bodies of over 4,000 dead Afrikaner farmers and their families. And where is the expeditionary forces? Where are guerrilla forces fighting for the white people? Even if it's a suicide mission, blow the shit out of those people that are killing white people. Same thing's going to have to happen here, I'm telling you. journalist Alex Newman, author of the recent book Crimes of the Educators, How Utopians Are Using Government Schools to Destroy America's Children, has written about South Africa for years and warns white South Africans face nothing less than genocide at the hands of an increasingly far left. It's got nothing to do with left or right, you know. No, it's sometimes it's a little bit more that way, but just like Milloy is talking about the fascists. Christ, World War II is over, buddy. Talk about a predatory capitalist, not the fascist. Newsman, who lived in South Africa from 2004 to 2005, explained to WND, while tragic, that European descent South Africans, that's white people, are in this situation. It's tragic. Oh, too bad. Now give me a shot of scotch and a cigar and we'll go on. It is the reality and the world must act. No, individuals must act. Not the world. The world never acts. Individual white people with guts and balls and guns gotta react. I mean, at least take out the murderers. You may not win, but you at least take out the murderers and the rapists. Radical South African President Jacob Zuma, the top nigger dog, publicly sings songs advocating the extermination of whites in the only homeland they know. Well, I'm sure Jacob Zuma travels the streets of South Africa. I'm sure he goes to the theater once in a while. I'm sure he even goes to a bar once in a while. So what's your problem? They're being openly dehumanized and slaughtered as the regime does nothing, or worse, encourages it. Forget the regime. This is white people's responsibility. Whatever happened to all those tough Afrikaner military people? Where the hell did they go? The Communist Party, African National Congress regime is going off the rails, and the world's leading expert on genocide, Dr. Gregory Stanton, has already sounded the alarm bell about the planned extermination of South Africans of European ancestry. Well, that's been going on for ages. Of course they want to exterminate whites. Of course they want to exterminate. When did you finally get the message? Ilana Mercer's Into the Cannibal's Pot, Lessons for American Post-Apartheid South Africa, is a polemical work anchored in history, reality, fact, and the political philosophy of classical liberalism, which proves anybody can write a book, but a book doesn't change anything. Rarely does a book change anything unless you beat somebody's brains in with it. It's got to be about a 500-pager, too. Both Newman and Mercer charge Western leaders with hypocrisy when it comes to immigration. Well, that's all they know is hypocrisy. All the governments of the world deal in hypocrisy. Mercer observes, quote, over the objections of Europeans, unelected Eurocrats, I like that, Eurocrats, are planning to accept at least 1 million uneducated, poor, possibly illiterate, permanent, predominantly male, and by necessity, violence-prone North African niggers sailing from Libyan ports to South Italy. But imperiled white South Africans claiming refugee status are regularly returned to South Africa. If you don't think that those, a lot of people on this earth need to be taken care of, well, I don't know where you're at. Newman declares if Europe and the United States could take in tens of millions of nigger refugees and immigrants from the Middle East, North Africa, Latin America, and every other place where there is trouble, they can certainly find space for a few million upstanding white South Africans fleeing for their lives. Well, sure. But the ruling class of whites, yes, ruling class of white Aryans, the Republican class, the property class, they don't care any more than they did under slavery in the South, where the white working class lived like dogs. There was hardly any middle class in the South. It's always this way. They try to come across as, well, we care about the white race. I know a lot of guys in this right-wing racial group, we care about the white race. But they don't do anything about it. As Mercer notes, South Africa was once a haven for political dissidents. Yeah, when whites are in control, they let everybody in. For Jews, like my grandfather, who fled the Bolsheviks to build a life in South Africa, citing Polish and Czech refugees who found a haven in South Africa, and when they fled communism's depredations, Mercer asked, where's the reciprocity? They're never going to be that because the white race is the target, the perennial target. It's always been the target, and they want to finish you off, dummy. Mercer warns whites in South Africa face a slow-motion Zimbabwe if they do not flee the country. Tell me there's not enough white men down there that can lock and load and take care of a few problems. I submit to you that 100 white guys well-trained could put to flight thousands of niggers any day of the week. Zimbabwe is large, but everybody's chasing the buck, you see. Even a lot of these white farmers, when they knew they should get out of there, they're chasing the buck. They want to hang on to the material goods. They're more interested in material goods than the race, and so they get it. Zimbabwe is likely a harbinger of things to come. Well, things that are, really, and instructive to understand that South Africa's strong man and their poor black pop constituents salute Robert Mugabe for giving greedy whites a long delay and just uppets. This son of a bitch is 80-some years old. He's still walking around. Jesus Christ. I guess the white race deserves it if they won't fight back. I mean, if they won't do anything, I guess we deserve what we permit. When Mugabe took power in 1980, there were about 300,000 whites in Zimbabwe. Pursuant to the purges conducted by the leader and his people, fewer than 20,000 whites remain, and of these, only 200 are farmers. Well, that's why Zimbabwe niggers are going to starve to death, because the white people, farmers, could feed those people. But if they're not there and on the farm, they're not going to feed anybody. So that's one thing good. If all the white farmers move out of Zimbabwe, the niggers will starve. And a lot of those people, white people from Zimbabwe and South Africa, farmers, have moved up into, I believe it's Nigeria, and they're welcomed with open arms for the whites to build them an agribusiness up there, for the whites to build a strong agricultural thing. Not every nigger is stupid. Mercer also claims white faces no economic future in South Africa. Well, in South Africa, it has no future either, because it will gradually deteriorate, just like we're deteriorating here, under the yoke of the Black Plague. Although most farmland in South Africa is still owned by whites, yeah, predatory capitalists sitting in penthouses in New York and Johannesburg, the ANC government is working to change the landowners' landscape, an extremely radical form of affirmative action. In other words, just take all the land away from the white people and put it in the hands of the predatory capitalists who are behind the scenes, just like in this country. Big agribusiness all over. Black economic empowerment means that racist labor laws make it hard for able white men to make a living. Well, same way here, right? Newman said South Africans of all races should be able to live in peace. Well, that's bullshit. They never will. And freedom without persecution. Racist laws barring them from the economy and the grotesque farm murders that have become a fact of life for so many South Africans. Where are those tough guys I used to talk to on the internet in South Africa? These guys supposedly had balls the size of cantaloupes, but I don't think so. But absent these South Africa, and why didn't somebody hide one of those A-bombs when they had them down there in South Africa? Why didn't you Afrikaners get an A-bomb out of the military and put it on a truck, hide it in a cave or something? But absent those South African reforms, Newman says, the West has a duty to allow these hard-working, Western-minded Christian forget Christian, white people. Sure, there are a lot of white people who say they're Christians, but can they be trusted? You know, they're too tolerant. We used to have white Christians in this country who could really take it to the enemy. If the Indians, the Mongols got it out of line, they took care of them. But the people here, I see them all around here. I'm surrounded by these Christian Zionists and Christian and love everybody, love your neighbor. And you just don't like him because of his skin color and they're equal to us. And okay. Mercer says America could use many of the white South African refugees. Of course they could. We could. And I welcome to come in here. And a lot of them did, and I've met some of them. As I describe in Into the Cannibal's Pot, there are no better farmers than the hardy Boers, currently operating under the most precarious conditions. Despite a life of graft and grief, most persist and pervasive. These are just the kind of men and women whom America, once frontier nation, needs. Well, of course. So who in Washington is stopping it? The one I keep telling you about, the number one enemy of the working class whites in this country, the U.S. State Department. You want to solve a problem, get rid of the State Department in any manner possible. The State Department is your bitter enemy. But she also says Americans need to pay attention to South Africa for more ominous reasons. The situation in South Africa is coming to a theater near you. Well, maybe that'll force whites to fight. I don't know. In South Africa, the white taxpayers constitute a minority with no say in the government. South Africa is a dominant party state. And because of central planning, mass immigration from the third world, in other words, the non-white nigger world, the mass importation of undocumented Democrats, and the U.S. is on the verge of becoming a dominant party state where a disenfranchised minority supports the majority. Well, that's okay. We'll have to return to the killing fields, maybe with a Pol Pot necessity. If white South Africans, particularly Afrikaners, are not able to leave South Africa, Newman says one alternative is for the Afrikaner nation to exercise its inherent right to self-determination. White people? Self-determination? You must be kidding. In February the 7th, article for National Review Online, another phony bunch, Josh Gelumnir, suggests a similar solution, calling for endangered South Africans to set up a Singapore-style city-state. Well, that would be great. They should do it. But, everybody just talks about talk. We got to sit down and talk about it. We got to find a solution. Yeah. If Afrikaners and the white South Africans generally are not given a safe haven either in Africa or in the West, warns Newman, a tragedy of monumental proportions is just around the corner. Well, why don't they appeal to Putin and Russia? I think Putin would accept them gladly and add to the genius of the Russian people. Summarizing the precautions position of South African whites, Newman said, I just hope the world will come open its eyes before it's too late and you know what people around and please help me. Do you own a gun? No, I don't believe in guns. You don't have any guns? No, I never had, because it's hateful to have a gun. How about a tank? No, I don't have a tank. Well, how about some of that heavy equipment that Metzger's got out there on his lot? Well, I would never get involved with a guy like that. He's a radical. He's a hater, and he's terrible. I know all these good niggers. They're good niggers and good Mexicans, and they're good. And Metzger, he's too radical, man. That's it for today. I'll be back tomorrow on Thursday. And Terrible Tommy is going to be out of here in 14. 5.
I, Amanda Green.
Kill them all! Metallica!